Good afternoon, everybody. This is Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat. And welcome to another recording. Welcome to another episode here on the channel. And I would like to report that I'm back from vacation. I'm recording this time from home, my home office. And the last episode, which it hasn't been published yet, I've recorded from a sidewalk cafe in Greece. So that will be published soon. And today I'm honored and I have the distinct pleasure to have with me my colleague. We've worked together on the at the Canadian Language Industry Association in various capacities, Sylvia Celebadre. Sylvia, thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it. Today, we're going to be talking about a topic that it's been in the news for a while, since September 19th, at least. And it's sort of tragic, when I read the facts about the case in British Columbia. And you posted something on LinkedIn to the matter. I'll let Sylvia introduce herself in a second, and we'll talk about the case in a few minutes. We're going to be talking about a case where miscommunication led to a tragic event and what could have happened, what should have happened, and how do we prevent it from happening in the future. We'll dive into the detail in a second. Sylvia, welcome to the channel. Always good to have you with me. And thanks for taking the time on this important topic. If you don't mind, for those who don't know you, and I know you're a returning podcast guest on this channel, but some new audience probably members that don't know you, if you don't mind introducing yourself for a few minutes.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me as a guest again on your podcast. I'm truly honored. And I think it's very important that we're discussing this very important topic. And as far as myself, so I'm Sylvia Celebadre. I am the president of the Society of Translators here in British Columbia. And I also am the chair of the Board of Examiners on a national level in Canada for CITIC. And I had the honor to be able to put out a statement on behalf of CIBIC regarding this very tragic case where, unfortunately, lack of interpretation or lack of language resources was a factor in a tragic outcome.
Absolutely. Sylvia, again, thanks for joining me to discuss this matter. So let's go through some of key facts of just to tell the audience exactly what we're talking about. So in Surrey, BC, that's a town not far away from Vancouver.
Absolutely.
The Surrey RCMP, that's the Royal Canadian Mounted Police for the international audience of this channel, and responded to a disturbance call at home in Surrey, BC. The event occurred early in the morning hours on September 19th. This is publicly available information, by the way. I scanned the web for some of those highlights. And according to the Independent Investigation Office report, the woman involved in the case, her name is Vanessa, had locked herself in a room with a toddler and was reported holding a weapon, an object near the child. After over 30 minutes, the police issued commands, things like drop the knife, drop the weapon, drop the scissor. Fatal shots were fired around 5:30 a.m. and the RCMP claimed that the daughter was not physically injured. The baby, the toddler, apparently was not physically injured. But the individual has passed, was shot.
Yeah.
Support workers report that Vanessa has been living in a shelter with her child for 2 months amid those allegations of abuse. So she must have had some sort of an abusive relationship and she ended up in a shelter. Advocates from family and community group have raised questions about how the situation escalated, are demanding transparency and accountability. How did we get here? I guess the community groups are escalating this matter, and they're trying to find how did we get here and try to find some investigation around transparency around the matter. How did we get here? And there are still a few things that are not clear in the case, according to what's available on the news, specifically reporting from Global News, whether Vanessa had indeed a weapon and what kind. That's still under investigation if she ever had a weapon. The details of the abuse allegation that led to the 911 call and the communication dynamics between the police and the deceased and the victim remains unclear publicly. So those are not out there yet. The rationale behind the use of non-professional translation like Google Translate rather than an interpreter or a Spanish-speaking officer is part of what the Society of Translators and Interpreters of British Columbia are addressing in the letter that was posted earlier and forwarded to the authorities. Mm-hmm. The Independent Investigative Office is still conducting its probe and not all findings are yet public. So the important thing here is, which we got to be discussing with Sylvia today, is the situation in general that led us here, and the society of the translators and interpreters of British Columbia feels emotionally vested in this, because as a past president of the Canadian Language Industry Association myself, I can tell you anytime there's an issue involving communication that ends up in tragic event like what we're witnessing right now, it's heartbroken. We all become numb to that. Why? It's because it's solvable. We can solve this and it doesn't need to get to that. So I don't know the circumstances. I don't know the evidence. I don't know what happened in the background. But if it's strictly communication, this is something that we can solve. And a lot of times we talk about it on the channel here. Many times I've mentioned, hundreds of times, relying on technology is one thing. But when you get into a situation that is life or death, involving other human being, and you're trying to use technology just to, I don't know what it is, what would be the reason for that. Specifically in those cases, I think we're pushing it too far. I think now we need a sanity check on how are we using the technology, when are we using the technology, and if it's going to lead to a positive outcome, fine. But if it's not going to lead to a positive outcome, the question becomes why. Sylvia, the floor is yours. I read the letter. I've given a little bit of a context. Hopefully I captured in a short time that I did some reading on this. Hopefully I've captured what you want to capture from the situation. What is STIBC situation or position on the matter?
Right. So our position on the matter, and thank you so much for your summary. Now, I do believe some more details have emerged since the report, the independent watchdog report, was published. And I at least do have some general understanding about the situation as it was reported in that report and what happened. And the details are not important, but basically there was a hostage kind of situation in regards to the toddler, where the police at least felt that the mother was holding some scissors to the toddler, but they didn't really understand why. She was a loving mother by all accounts beforehand. It seems like she was probably having some kind of mental health breakdown, like all evidence seemed to point to that. But when the police got there, they did try to find a Spanish officer, but apparently no Spanish officer was available. And the question that we have at STIBC is, why did nobody think of calling an interpreter? Because I realized the situation wasn't quite right for a phone interpreter, because there was a lot of chaos, different people, different actors involved, a developing situation. But having been an interpreter myself for many years, I honestly feel like there is a chance that the outcome could have been different. And it breaks my heart to think about that, because I've gone into so many situations and suddenly, let's say this person's having a mental health breakdown, they're living through their own little sort of like nightmare, and the police is not establishing any kind of conversation with this person that can be like, what can we do for you? What do you need? What are you thinking about? This conversation is not established. It's like, drop the weapon, drop the scissors through Google Translate, through a machine, to a person who's having a mental health breakdown. This really adds to the sort of like the surreal quality of it all. And my point earlier was, when you go into a situation as a human interpreter, and often people are having a hard time for whatever reason, it's court, it's medical, it's whatever, you can immediately see the energy in the room changes completely, because this person realizes, now here's someone who understands me and now a conversation can be established. Now, I'm not going to say for sure the outcome would have been different. Maybe it was a tragic situation that would have developed in the same way. But it really breaks my heart, and I find it astonishing that the RCMP didn't think, let's call in an interpreter if we don't have a Spanish officer, and then we can establish a conversation. I feel like that should be the minimum standard, and I cannot understand why that did not happen.
So is it your feeling, conviction, whatever you want to call it, that a life could have been saved?
Yes. I mean, I don't want to say categorically, because I'm not God and I don't know what would have happened, but I think there is at least quite a reasonable chance. I think a reasonable person would say, okay, there is a chance here. And it, for me, it has a special connection because I'm a Spanish interpreter myself. And I know some other Spanish interpreters.
It hits home for you, right?
It hits home. I'm like, the first thing I thought when I heard about this case is, why didn't someone call me?
You know,
I'm a counselor. I'm a Spanish interpreter. I am very connected to the Colombian and Afro-Colombian community in Surrey through some of my employees, and I have different connections. And it's not about me, like me personally. I know a lot of wonderful Spanish interpreters here in BC. I think there would have been a good chance that the outcome would have been different.
So in your opinion, and I noticed like from the news that this discussion took on like, what is it, 30 minutes of back and forth between the, or maybe longer, but from what I'm reading from Global News, it looks like that entire dynamics took 30 minutes. It could be the news maybe misreporting it or something. I don't know, but I'm just reading what's out there. But waiting for an interpreter to show up on scene, do you think there's a dynamic that says, you know, the police has like 2 minutes to solve the issue versus wait for the interpreter to come in? Is there some dynamics like this or no?
Yeah, I think, I mean, if a situation is developing in a few minutes, then obviously the police has to do what they can. And it's not always realistic to get anyone on the scene, not even an ambulance.
They're thinking there's a life at stake here, the toddler's life at stake.
Yeah, and so I understand that. My understanding is that it happened over a long period of time, and many calls for sure were made back and forth. You know, should we do this, bring in another officer? Lots of conversations happened. That interpreting conversation did not even happen as far as the information that I have read. And I'm like, this conversation should have happened. I'm not saying you could get an interpreter in time. I'm not saying everything would have been rosy, but I wish RCMP, and I do want to get in touch with them, like Stibic wants to get in touch with them and be like, does the RCMP not understand the value of interpreters in crisis situations? Is that not something that even crosses
I do believe, though, you know, you bring up a very valid point. I mean, as an association, the Canadian Language Industry Association should have that conversation at a national level. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily. You can have your conversation, obviously, with on British Columbia detachments. But in national sense, this should be a national conversation with the, you know, what we call in Canada, the RCMP, which to the U.S., that would be the federal agencies, whatever they are. For us, it's the federal policing, if you will. And they should have those conversations, if nothing else, from an awareness and education perspective. Because this situation, I'm assuming, and you're probably more aware of this than I am, you're the interpreter that goes into the field that sees these situations. It's not unique. With all unfortunate in place here, unfortunately, this is not unique situation. It happens more than we think about it sometimes. This one hit the news. I'm not sure if all of them hit the news.
Yeah, absolutely. And as far as this one hit the news, because it was a very dramatic story that ended in the death of a young woman, a young mother. But this kind of issues of just not having an awareness of the importance of interpreters in crisis situations, whether or not someone dies at the end, that's like the extreme, like the absolute extreme. But like in between, when there is some kind of major investigation or there's a sexual assault or something happening in the middle of the night, and it involves someone who does not speak the language, we would like our institutions in Canada to be aware that it is very important that that person has an interpreter, and that it goes beyond the kind of hard communication that maybe Google Translate can give you in an emergency. It's more than that. It's about that person feeling like they can communicate. It can be key in emergency situations. And I wish there was more awareness of how important that is.
So I was going to ask you, like, before we dive into the other topics, is this the STIBC, I want to say, message that you want to send out? Is that entire, you know, availability of interpreters for those type of situation and don't rely on technology? Is this the, or am I paraphrasing too much of your letter here? So I'll leave it up to you.
Yeah, I think that is absolutely the message we would like to send. Remember that there are in-person interpreters that you can bring to crisis situations. And please remember that it is very important that they're there. It's not an afterthought. It's not a nice to have if we have all the time in the world. It can really make a difference, as in this case, perhaps between life and death.
Absolutely. Now, one of the things that technology hasn't been able to solve yet, which I have it on my list here for discussion, is the cultural nuance. Because a lot of times We could put a couple of words, and I just got back from Greece, and I use translation technology on my phone when I need to. I speak Greek, but I'm not a professional at it. And it's fine. It solves a problem if you're in a taxi, if you're ordering a beer, that's fine. It solves an issue. But if you're in a life and death situation, you're in an immigration situation, you are in a tense situation, legal, whatever it is, and there is a cultural barrier in there. Beside the words to be translated, there is a cultural barrier and an emotional barrier. And I don't know if, you know, straight translation from a technology can capture what the other person is saying or feeling or what's going on the other side. This is really, really hits home because a lot of times, you know, I speak Arabic and I speak a few other languages. So I get involved in these things and I, you know, either show up at a hospital or something. Somebody asked me to translate for somebody and I do it. And you can feel like when you're in between, you know, how do you explain pain? How do you explain not just the pain, emotional aspect attached to a pain? Like, it's crazy to put that into words because there's no way I can express it even in Arabic in my mother tongue. It's just, and now that we're relying on Google Translate or some sort of a technology to express the emotion, the cultural attachment to a statement that we're saying either in a life and death situation or otherwise. It doesn't need to be a life and death situation, but it's very important. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think that's, you've hit the nail right on the head with this. And it goes back to what I was saying earlier, that when you go into a court situation, maybe someone's been accused or there's some kind of emotionally highly charged situation, you can feel that everything is different when there is a human interpreter. Suddenly, the person who's having the issue, you can feel them relax. You can feel them like, okay, now I can take up the space and this person is going to convey that for me. And if you think about human interpreters and what they do versus what Google Translate can do, even at its best, let's just forget about, you know, that it can also make mistakes about life or death decisions. Let's just put that to the side and say that it works 100% perfect for what it is, which it really doesn't. But let's say that there is like the human element where me as an interpreter, I'm a conveyor of emotion, of cultural nuance. And that is extremely important. When someone is in court, when someone is having a mental health breakdown, it's not just the information. They say, you know, information itself might be 10-15% of what we're communicating. Is we're using ourselves as human emotional vessels to transmit something onto somebody else. And a lot of interpreters, they teach this interpreting courses. You're using your body. You're not just a machine. You're not imitating Google Translate. You're using your body, your posture, the tone, everything to convey as much of the message as you can. And then if someone's having, you know, a psychotic breakdown or like some kind of issue like this, these things are very important. The information is the least of your worries. You know, it's about like conveying that desperation, that sense of, you know, what could work, what could be a good intervention. You know, I wish the police had established a conversation with this lady and be like, okay, why are you holding the scissors? What would you like? What is your problem? What are you worried about? Is the minimum we should be asking for
that's
sure.
That's right. Now, in your opinion, and you know, this is pretty much I think it's a sensitive question, but I'll ask it anyway. Do you think language access is a human rights issue? Do you think, and how does that play, in your opinion, in a bilingual country like Canada, which, you know, has two official languages, English and French, and the victim in this case, or the deceased in this case, spoke Spanish? And Canada has, according to what I know, close to about 125 languages represented in Canada from various demographics from around the world. So how does that play out?
I think language access as a human right is a topic that we should be talking about. And when I see situations like this, I'm like, we don't talk about it enough.
It should be a human rights issue. I mean, the reason I bring it up, because I feel strongly about it. Like, yeah, you know, you need, as a human rights, you need like equality, you need food and shelter, you need other things. But language to be understood in those types of situations, nobody's saying, you know, don't go to English or French school or don't learn the official language of the country. But when you get into a situation that we just described right now today, this, during our conversation, which is very tragic. And I totally feel for the police officer who's trying to save a baby. I get it. I understand where their position. But at the same time, we left wondering, as professionals in the industry, could we have saved this situation by having and conducting a very, I want to say, natural conversation in the language of the all involved, in this case, Spanish.
Yeah, absolutely. And the reason that it's a human rights issue is because if a person, we're welcoming them here into Canada, we're saying, you can live here, you know, you have rights, you can enjoy our services, our police services, our court services, all of this is for you. But then if you can't, it's about being yourself in situations and in crisis situations, especially, right? If you're having a mental health crisis, you should be able to communicate fully, just like a Canadian who speaks English in Surrey should. The fact that there is an additional barrier and that that barrier can make the difference between life or death, because if I truly believe if they had established a conversation with this woman, something could have been achieved. So this person, supposedly they enjoy the same rights as everyone else, but because there is this language access issue, in practice, they don't. They don't. Mm-hmm. They have a much bigger chance of somehow having a bad outcome in a police situation, in a court situation, and that's not fair. And they should be, as much as humanly possible, they should be able to express themselves and to understand what is going on, you know, as best as good as anyone else.
So in your opinion, like, what is the feedback you're receiving locally in the community of interpreters or locally in the community where you are in Vancouver about the impact of this tragedy on the society from a value, how do they value linguistic inclusion? Do they see linguistic inclusion better now? I mean, in this case, are they pushing for linguistic inclusion, or they're saying, hey, learn English or French, or we're not going to be able to communicate with you. I'm sorry.
I think when in the world that I live in with a lot of translators and interpreters, it would seem like linguistic inclusion is already here. Like everyone believes in it. Everyone thinks it should be implemented. That's what you would think. That is why it's so shocking.
When my next conversation is going to be about policy, right?
Yeah, when you see that out there, it's not the case. People aren't even thinking about language inclusion. They're thinking weapons. They're thinking, you know, what should we do? Should we shoot? Should we not? No one's thinking we can't communicate with this person. It is shocking. And in terms of the response to our press release at STIBC and everything else, the response from the community of translators and interpreters has been amazing. Like the post has pretty much gone viral. Like everyone's resharing. Everyone feels, how could they not think of bringing in an interpreter in person to a situation like this? But having said that, the response from the media and everything else where we've tried to connect with them has been a little bit disappointing. I feel like this is already becoming
another topic they want to cover.
No, another thing that's going to blow over that people don't.
This media will cover it.
Yeah, and I'm so happy, Robin, that you have taken this on, because I do think we should not ignore this.
It's important, Sylvia. It's very important. I mean, we talk about language as a, you know, we talk about it in a business context all the time, but language is to serve a human. And here we have a human condition that end up in a fatality, and we're not going to be talking about it? Absolutely, we're going to be talking about it.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's not for that, what is it for then? What is the purpose of language industry if it's not, I mean, it should be the basic, the most basic things is save a life, either in a medical interpretation field or in a legal field or in a situation like we just described this morning. Those should be the most basic stuff that we should be using as a raison d'etre for this particular industry, right? So, but when we talk about the industry in general, we talk about how to save money, how to accelerate it, how to make it better, more efficient, introduce technology to it, which I'm going to ask a question. I'm not imagining in a situation where the police, for instance, reach out to his iPhone or cell phone of some sort, look up Google Translate, and then communicate with that individual based on. How do they transfer? I mean, I'm assuming there's like a 10, 20 meters between them and the victim and the deceased. How are they communicating?
I am guessing that they were using voice recognition, because you can use Google Translate with voice and then it will play out. A lot of people use that on holiday. It is a very good use of it, like you said, when you're on holiday and you want to order a beer. And if you get something else, that's fine too.
Yes.
But it's not good for the... It is absurd. I mean, it is better than nothing, yes. Like if you have 1 minute, it's better than nothing. But it's absurd to deal with a person who's having a serious mental health crisis and who's holding a weapon to a baby. Then it just becomes absolutely
You know, I shake my head because humanity is not a mathematical formula. Huh. And you know, to compute human emotion and put them and encapsulate them into a software, to me, and I know we're advancing and I know technology is moving forward and I talk about AI all the time and up to speed on it. I don't want anybody educating me on it. I think I can use a little bit of education here and then, but I think I'm up to speed on it. But the key point that I'm trying to flag here is the human emotion in general. It doesn't matter what it is. It's very hard to encapsulate it. Otherwise, it would have been done a long time ago and put it into a software and can it into a software. It's very hard to do that. And I'm not sure if we'll ever get there. We can do the mathematical things. You know, we can use grammatical, we can use formulas, we can use a bunch of other things to calculate responses in different languages. But to absolutely convey the cultural and the human aspect of things, of languages, it's very, very hard because we need to know the exact history of every individual to do that.
Yeah.
That's very hard.
Absolutely. And for those of you who know me, you know that I'm a major proponent of AI in translation and interpreting.
Absolutely.
As far as it goes and where it serves people, I really liked what you said. You know, when it makes sense, I think we have to keep, and I loved your comments because I think this common sense of when to use something and when not, and what makes sense. And absolutely, human emotion is a very complex thing. And to me, interpreters are actors. They're acting. I feel myself when I'm interpreting for someone that I'm taking on their emotions. I'm kind of processing them inside me and I'm putting them back out there. And I think a lot of interpreters feel that way. Some people say they feel possessed when they're interpreting because they're sort of like, you know, suddenly you feel angry because the person's angry that you're interpreting for and you're doing that. And machines are nowhere near that level. And I don't know if they will ever be, but they're definitely not now. When you pass Google Translate and in a neutral voice, they convey the information, it can be very inadequate for many situations. And yes, let's use AI, but when it makes sense and not in situations where sort of that human heart, that human emotion is so crucial, a situation like this one.
You know, I have so many questions on using AI by a police. I have so many questions about that. It's not even funny. That would be like a different, you know, 2-hour podcast on this one, because the security parameters around using that, it's very incredible. Like, I mean, are you allowed to jump on any technology? I thought, you know, police and federal agents and whoever they are in security, they have a very restrictive methods of operation that you're not allowed to go outside the firewall, basically, the technology firewall. I'm not sure how they were able to use these types of technologies if they're not within inside the network of whoever they work for. There's a huge security issues on this one. There's many other factors that get into this. But what we talk about it on this channel quite often, and you've probably heard me saying this before, is if you take any process, not just language process, any process, marketing, you know, legal, etc. People are rushing right now to introduce technologies to these types of processes. Crazy rushing speed. Why? Is because they want to make sure that the cost is there, is reduced. What we call efficiency, meaning I'm going to reduce the cost to bare minimum. And where we talk about introduce the AI in the right steps, sometimes in the being zealous to deploy fast, achieve the results fast, we are taking on steps that we're not supposed to put them on AI, but they're taking them and put them on AI. And I talk about AI now, and it's a general term, but could be any technology, to be honest with you. This is where we talk about careful deployment of AI. Careful deployment of AI. Where are you deploying it? Who are you deploying it with? What technology are you using? And continue evaluating, which brings me to my next topic here. In the letter, do you feel like there is a lack in the system? Like, I'm talking about policy here. Immediate interpreters access to these, you know, federal agents or federal police, whoever they are. Do you think there's a policy that dictates if you come in into these types of situation, you should call a person, or if that doesn't exist or exists, but we ignored it because of the situation the way it is?
Well, that's a very good question. And I don't know the full answer, but that's something where like STIBC really wants to get involved and get to the bottom of this. Is it just a lack of awareness of the need for interpreters? Because having read the report, it doesn't look like it was a priority for anybody or anything that people thought about. But then I was going to the next thing. Like, if they had thought we should get an interpreter, would they have known how to get an interpreter in person right away? Is there a policy that the RCMP uses? And the truth is, I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that there should be a policy that it should cross their minds. Number one, absolute basic. Number two, they should know where to go to get an in-person interpreter. I'm not saying that somebody gets a fine in the middle of the night and they speak Spanish and they should call an interpreter. Come here in person. We have an emergency. But they knew this situation was like life or death. And there could be a lot of others where a lot is at stake. So they should know where to call an interpreter. And in fact, that very day when we were preparing the statement, the board of STIBC, we started writing to each other on the WhatsApp group that we have. And we were like, if this thing does not exist, if there isn't a list of interpreters that can be called 24 hours a day here in BC, we should start one at this, as a society. And that's a commitment that we have made. We want to talk to the RCMP. We want to talk to the institutions. We want to understand from their perspective, who would they call? What would they do? And if the systems are not in place, we want to make sure that they are in place and that they understand where to go. Absolutely.
Do you keep in touch with the public sector? Do you keep in touch with government in British Columbia? Yeah.
We try to keep in touch with different members of the public sector. The challenge with the RCMP, which we are hoping to start a conversation with, is it's a national level institution. So sometimes they're a little bit harder. We are in conversation definitely with local institutions in BC, but it's a little bit harder when an institution is federal. But we are going to do it. We're going to start this conversation. As far as the media story goes, it might have blown over and be like last week's news, but we remember this and we want to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Well, you know what? I want to suggest this, but I'm not sure if you'll take me up on this. I think you guys should have in British Columbia a provincial day of remembrance for this incident. And you should highlight it as what not to do in a situation like this. Use it as a learning experience provincially and maybe nationally, I don't know, but at least on a provincial level, have some sort of a memorial for this or some sort of like something to remember it by. Because you mentioned earlier, like we talk about it, like news nowadays have like, what is it? Like they say 7-day cycle, not even 24-hour cycle. So, but there's a lot of learning in there and in this particular situation. And if that individual could have been saved or not saved, I don't know the circumstances. That's beyond me. And I will leave that to the experts. But in any case, I do believe that having and you believe as well, based on what we're talking about today, having a person, an interpreter, flesh and blood, they're representing the same community. They are from the same community. They speak the same language and they come from the same background. Facilitating the conversation, the situation could have been a lot better. That's our belief. That's why we're in this business.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to change that. If having, like a lot of times we celebrate the day we were instituted or the day we established as an association, 25-year anniversary, I think we should start celebrating our impact on humanity. And that's one opportunity. Either we do it on a Canadian Language Industry Association scale or we do it on a provincial scale. I think somebody needs to remember the impact of our industry on a human, and here's what we're going to do with this, and here's what we're going to learn from.
That sounds like an amazing idea. I would totally take you up on that. And I think once this podcast goes out, I think a lot of people here in BC, I know the board of directors at STIBC, I know our community, I know how strongly we feel about this, and we're going to make it happen. And one day it's going to make a difference for somebody else. It did not happen for Vanessa, but we really do believe that having those systems in place, having those conversations and reminding people of the value of human flesh and blood interpreters in crisis situations is something that is going to have a very meaningful impact in the future.
Now, what is your feeling on the collaboration between industry and government in general? I know we talked about a little bit about it, but in general, do you see budget constraints? Do you see I don't know if they even have a budget for these things. Do they have a budget for interpreters? Is there an element somewhere that says, yeah, you can buy interpreting services or maybe not? I have no idea. Do you know any of that stuff?
I know for sure, like for certain situations, like let's say court and some medical situations, they do have a budget and they do have interpreters. But my personal feeling is that it's a little bit scattered. And I'm glad we have institutions like the Society of Translators and Interpreters of BC who can try to establish conversations. And I think the government institutions kind of left to their own devices, it is often easy for them to not prioritize interpreting and translation services just because they're not in that world. It's just something that it's easy to forget for whatever reason. So I think the connections could definitely be stronger.
Yeah. And you know what? We talked a little bit about technology earlier. We talked about it from an AI perspective, but there are different types of technology that gives, you know, federal agencies or, you know, people who are in contact with the community access to interpretation services live with the interpreter online, with, you know, visually online, without actually having to have somebody book, travel, arrive, logistically handle all the situation. There are technology. Actually, we did a couple of podcasts. I posted them out. I'm not sure if you've seen them. One with LSA and their partners, Lingolet. I have a podcast there. I put it like 2 months ago now, July. So check it out. I feel like there are aspects of technology that we can use to make the service available.
Absolutely.
But still use a human, not necessarily, you know, the operating system on the phone came with. And we don't know if that's going to be okay or not. We have no idea.
Yeah, I think just the same as in interpreting, we still need the human element. We absolutely need the human element for making decisions about what kind of services are pertinent, useful in a particular situation. So I think there are situations where Google Translate is great and let's use it. There are situations where phone interpreting or live interpreting might be more appropriate. There are situations maybe like this one, where a human, like in-person interpreter, might be the best solution to have for different reasons. It's just a matter of, I know it's like common sense, but it's just a matter of having humans there making good decisions using our judgment. We have all of these great tools available, and I think we should absolutely make the most of them. But at the end of the day, there's going to be someone also there with a good head on their shoulders who's like, what does this situation, this specific situation require?
Yeah, 100%. And there's somebody that needs to evaluate where to apply these types of technology and where not to apply them, right? So obviously, we're all human. We all make mistakes. We all make errors. Nobody's foolproof from immune from making mistakes. I get it. Having went through the case, went through the discussions of what should happen and did not happen when we think it should happen in the future, what do you think the listeners should take away from this tragedy? What do you think the takeaway for the listeners from the tragedy is?
I think the most important lesson is language access is very important. It should be a human right, as we mentioned. It goes far beyond conveying the hard facts, the information. It has an emotional, a personal, and a human dimension that cannot be forgotten. And it's just, it can make a big difference. It's not a nice kind of like politically correct thing to talk about inclusion that no one really cares about, but it's nice to talk about. No, there can be cases where it can make a difference between life and death. And I hope everyone who's listening remembers that. And if they are in the industry, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners are, please make sure you also communicate that to other people, the value of human interpreters, and how they have not been completely replaced by AI, not at all.
I know. I did a podcast on the notion that Silicon Valley says, you know, we solved the language problem. Now what? That was the topic of the conversation. We had a good chuckles about that one. For other entities like individuals and organizations, in your opinion, how can they support interpreters access in their own environment? Like how do you figure like other individuals and organizations can support the interpreters to access their environment to support them, to help them?
So first thing is awareness. Like I hope having conversations like this will also somehow get to the ears of the right people, the institutions who can make decisions and who can bear this in mind. And then please reach out to the industry, reach out to the provincial societies. We are more than willing to help you understand where you need interpreters and to put the systems in place to make sure that they can be accessed in a way that makes sense in a timely way. And that, yeah, we have resilient systems that include the interpreting aspect for sure.
You know, I'm very happy to hear that the outcome from this, At least we have some sort of a silver lining that the toddler is safe. I'm very sorry to hear that the mother of the toddler is gone and no longer with us. Any final words for Vanessa Renteria Valencia's family or the interpreter community from your side?
Yes, just my deepest condolences to this family. As I was telling you earlier, I am very connected to the Colombian community in Surrey, and I speak Spanish.
I'm surprised you didn't know the family.
I do actually know some people in the family. This is actually cutting very close to home for me.
My condolences as well to the family and to you and to the community. Situation like this, hopefully it doesn't get repeated. Hopefully a lot of learning comes out of this. Hopefully we can correct a few items that should put us at a footing that is better in a future situation, similar to future situation.
And the Vanessa was a refugee or a refugee claimant here in Canada. So she was seeking protection. And I feel like Canada is a wonderful country. But in this particular case, I feel like there was a little bit of a failure on the part of the systems to really protect her like we should have done. So let's hope, as you said, that we can do better in the future.
Absolutely. Any final words or final thoughts? Sorry to bring you in on such a sad topic, but any final words?
No. Just like you said, I think we have to make our own silver lining out of this. And there are people in the future, things that haven't happened yet, and hopefully that will happen in a different way because we're having this conversation. So thank you very, very much for giving me this space.
Absolutely. Sylvia, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. And to our audience, thank you so much for listening in to this particular episode. I hope you like and share this content. I hope you appreciate what we do on this channel. And a lot of times I underestimate the reach of this channel, but every day I'm reminded by your comments, your emails that I receive, the engagements I receive, how far-reaching this channel has become over the past 2 years. We became the voice of the voiceless, I would call it, where we are elevating to the front. To the front of the media, the front of the news, the front of the social exchange, ideas and topics that otherwise would not have been shared out there. So I really appreciate the audience. I appreciate our special guest today, Sylvia. And thank you so much, Sylvia, for joining me. I will see you guys at the next episode. Thanks, Sylvia, again.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.